In his new series, David Pogue meets the people who are making things colder, faster, safer, and wilder. And the results are pretty amazing.
David Pogue is the technology columnist for the New York Times and host of PBS's Nova Science Now, as well as the new four-part series, Making More Stuff, which debuted last night on public television stations across Wisconsin. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, this four-part series focuses on making stuff faster. That's the first one, wilder, colder, and safer. First off, do you have, like, the most amazing job in the world, or what? It seems like it.
If you can even call it a job.
Is it a job? Do you get paid, or you just have fun?
They pay me to do this.
Oh, no. Well, tell us about this series. Let's start with the faster.
Yeah, so Making Stuff is a four-part miniseries. This is the second set of four that just aired last night. I think Faster might be rerun tonight in many cities. But basically, it's a host, it's me, illustrating cutting-edge scientific points by interviewing some of the coolest scientists all over the world. We went to five countries and took a year to film this thing, and illustrating them as dramatically as possible. So, for example, for Faster, we explored the America's Cup boat, which, thank goodness for us, won last month.
That was lucky.
Because we filmed it way last spring. And I actually got to go aboard this incredible 6-ton carbon fiber speed machine. It's the fastest sailboat ever built. And the way they do it is that it gets out of the water. They don't let the water slow it down. It has a little wing, an airfoil, under the water on a stick that lifts the entire craft above the surface of the water, maybe 12 or 15 feet. So the entire thing is riding on this tiny, tiny wing, and it's the weirdest thing to see, that the boat is hovering above the water, and therefore it's not being slowed down at all.
It was really weird to see when you said it would lift up out of the water, and it's almost like it's skimming or skating on the water instead of sailing on it.
And what's really weird is that it has two of these wings, one on each side, is a catamaran, but it only uses one at a time. So whichever one is opposite the way the wind is blowing, so the downwind hull puts its wing into the water. So it's like you're seeing a yacht bounce on a popsicle stick.
So
quite a visual.
How fast does it go?
At top speed, it goes 50 miles an hour. So that's, and what's really amazing is that they've managed to figure out how to make it go that fast with only one-third of that being the speed of the wind. So if the wind is blowing at 15 miles an hour, the boat goes at 45 miles an hour. It's amazing.
And as you find out, you know, we think there are these natural limits to speed, to how fast something can go, but scientists are kind of starting to smash those limits.
It's true. We looked at speed in every possible way. The world's fastest boat, as you know, the world's fastest bicycle, how to run faster, and even intangible aspects of speed, like the speed of boarding a plane or the speed of stock market transactions. Or my favorite is we spent a day in Kansas City, which is notable because they have the fastest internet in the country. That Google has been, they're running a pilot program where they run fiber optic cable from the fiber optic backbone directly to your house. And it is 200 times faster than the cable modem most people probably have today.
So now everyone's going to move to Kansas City.
you and a lot of other people.
Well, let's move to the wilder segment of things. What are scientists doing on the frontiers of wildness and in trying to incorporate some of the natural world into the functionality of everyday stuff?
Well, that's exactly it. That principle is called biomimicry. And it's, you know, stealing ideas from nature. Nature's had millions of years to solve these problems, and why shouldn't we steal those ideas for our technology? A lot of the show is robots, and I mean unbelievable robots. A hummingbird robot developed by the military that is so indistinguishable from an actual hummingbird that, as we filmed, real hummingbirds were attacking this thing. It's really amazing. A bee robot the size of a bee, 1/30th the weight of a penny. But there are other aspects of biomimicry that are benefiting us as well. One of the most interesting stories that we did is about hagfish. Hagfish is an eel. It looks like this gray sea worm, about maybe 2 or 3 feet long. which has a really unusual defense mechanism. When it's attacked, it releases these enormous quantities of clear, gooey slime. And I mean like buckets full. And so that whatever predator is trying to eat it gets a mouthful of slime and is suddenly more interested in staying alive than in eating this thing. And what they hope to do is extract the fibers, the very fine threads inside this hagfish slime, and make clothing out of it. Because, first of all, it would be very strong. This stuff is many times stronger than, for example, nylon. And secondly, it doesn't come from petroleum. So it would be better for the environment, better geopolitically. We just have to try to get people's minds off of the fact that they're wearing fish slime.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be good for anybody's dating life to be wearing slimy fish clothes, but I suppose there's military applications, right? You're crawling through the sand or something, and you want pants that aren't going to rip.
That's right. There's a lot of military money behind the cool science in this country, as I discovered doing this show. Over and over again, we visit these scientists doing these incredible things and say, now, who's funding this? The answer is always, oh, it's a military project. But one of the coolest was this robotic, I guess, ox or a headless horse. It's this enormous walking robot. Now, we see robots on TV and in the movies walking like a person, but that's a big farce because walking on 2 feet for a robot is astronomically different. They don't have an inner ear. They don't have real eyes. They don't have sensors in their feet to balance and walk like we do so effortlessly. So the truth is that walking robots are incredibly hard to build, and we're just getting there. But this ox robot has four hooves. The legs are based on a horse's gait. And unlike a two-footed robot or a wheeled robot, this thing can walk on uneven terrain, wet leaves, rocks, whatever. And the idea is our soldiers will load it up with their equipment, and it follows you. This robot follows you as you walk your 20 miles to the site of the battle or whatever. So you no longer have 100 pounds of gear on your back. You have this ox following you, carrying all your stuff.
Or it could be your baggage ox up a mountain or something like that.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I'm going to carry mine through TSA.
Yeah, I'm sure you won't have any problems getting through security there. Oh, well, it's so interesting. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Well, we're talking with David Pogue about his new series, Making More Stuff. And we're going to be back and pick that up, discuss more things, which is just a taste of what's to come. And we'll pick that conversation up in a bit. But first,
Rob Ferret here. And Gene Purcell has joined us dressed in his finest hagfish slime suit.
It's a look.
Because he's celebrating the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. We are here to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy. Programs like this one, Central Time. That's how WPR works. The people who use it help pay for it. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to support the programs you count on.
Yeah, let me just wipe some of the slime off of my notes here. Now, last hour, we heard from about 43 of you. Thanks so much
Great.
For calling in and pledging your support. We appreciate all of them. But it's a brand new hour. That means we've got another goal before us. This hour, by 5 o'clock, we need to have 45 pledges in through the door. These goals are set up, by the way, to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money that we need to pay for all of the programs that you rely on. So help us meet that goal with your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network connects you with experts, with authors, with people who study interesting stuff, like our guest right now. How many times do you get to hear great conversations like this anywhere but the Ideas Network? We bring the experts right to you. To help make it possible, give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Now, you may be someone who's listened to Wisconsin Public Radio for a year or two or three, and perhaps you've never made a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio before. Well, today, you can find out just how it feels.
It feels great. That's what so many people who have made that first pledge tell us. It feels great to support something you love, something you use, that you rely on every day. Take a moment to make yourself feel awesome when you make your first ever pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 202-2552.
And remember, when you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, that WPR is your radio station. Your intelligence, your involvement, and your high expectations shape everything you hear on these airwaves.
Thank you for making sure that Wisconsin and the rest of the world has a vital, strong public radio service. WPR, it's your station because you fund it. Take that step right now with a pledge of any amount. You pick the amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So I've been living in Wisconsin for roughly the last 20 years. I came here for school. I think I became a member when I was in my mid-20s. Whenever I could, I would try to send $20 or something and whatever I could manage at that time. I've always imagined that it would be fun to be a philanthropist, and if I thought something was really a wonderful cause that I could give them $1 million, just, you know, open my checkbook. There are not nearly as many zeros involved, but in a small way, I'm a small-scale philanthropist. It definitely feels like money that's going to a good cause. When I became a sustainer, it felt like there was an additional connection. To me, it's a no-brainer. When I became a sustainer, it just made things that much better. Sort of like the way it felt when I got married a couple years ago. I loved him a lot, but when I married him, it felt even that much better. My name is Lisa, and I live in Monona, Wisconsin. I really enjoy being a sustainer, and I encourage you to do the same.
Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Gene Purcell. We are asking for your support of WPR during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $5 a month or $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. You may have been listening for a couple of days, a couple of years, but now we are asking you to make a habit of donating. And this is one of those good habits, a habit that you can actually be proud of. But the trick is to get started. All habits have to start someplace. Get started today by making your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Maybe you listen to us when you're driving home from work each and every day, maybe around this time. Well, if you're about to get home, you're on your way, make a pledge to make a pledge. When you get there, when you arrive at your destination, turn on the computer or the tablet, whatever you got, whatever the kids have these days, and go to WPR.org and make a pledge. Or remember this, lock it into your brain, 888-202-2552, and make your pledge when you get home.
But it's important. Remember, we've got that goal before 5 o'clock. We need to have some pledges in, and we've got just 44 pledges to go in order to make that goal before 5 o'clock. It is your support that makes the difference here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on Wisconsin Public Radio to bring you great conversations. We count on you to help pay for it. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our conversation now with David Pogue, host of Nova's Making More Stuff, where he examines the science behind making things faster, colder, wilder, and safer. And David, I want to go back to the faster, because this is something I think a lot of people will be interested in. Running speed. Now, you kind of think you can't best someone who's a trained runner, someone who's been at this for a long time. But there are things, according to science, that we can do to make to shave seconds off our time.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced at all that this was going to make a good television segment. They had me, a 50-year-old man, race against this 20-something Olympic runner from Trinidad. He beat me. Yes, he did. He had an 11-second time on the, 100 meter, and mine was 18 seconds. But then this Southern Methodist University professor took me into his running lab and explained to me a really weird thing about running. All of us, the Olympic guy, me, little old ladies, we all move our legs at the same speed. In other words, our strides are the same. So it's got nothing to do with how fast you move your legs. So that was a shocker.
Yeah, that seems crazy. So yeah, have the same stride.
That's right. You and I have the same stride, and every one of your listeners, if you were to watch us in slow motion on screen side by side, our legs would move through the same cycles at the same speed. What's different is how hard you hit the ground vertically with each footstep. In other words, once you've started running, you've already got your momentum. You've already got your forward speed. Now, you just want to be in the air for as much of the time as you can. He explained it's like a Super Bowl in a parking lot. Like, once you throw that ball, the higher it is in the air, each bounce will carry it farther because it's already going forward. So the professional runners hit the ground downward harder with each footstep. So when I tried that, we went back to the track, I shaved 2 seconds off my time, and that's after a whole day of running on treadmills in the lab. I was really tired, but it really works. So, I mean, you can just go and do this right now. Just focus on hitting downward rather than leaning forward, and you'll run faster.
Now, does that mean, though, that running should be a game for the young because you're pounding the heck out of your knees and your joints?
We didn't get into that part of it.
And if you want speed, though, that's the way to go, huh?
That's right.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about the speed thing. Let's skip ahead to making things colder. Now, it seems like humanity has spent a lot of time trying not to be cold, you know, trying to fight the cold and stay warm. But you're talking about scientists trying to make things colder. Now, how could that technology improve our lives?
Yeah, this is a really cool show. This is the third of the four-week series. And it starts at body temperature, and through the hour episode, it goes closer and closer to absolute zero. And along the way, we investigate this wood frog, a very common frog in the Northeast, that does something really strange in the winter. It freezes solid. It doesn't hibernate. It doesn't go south. It just freezes solid. The brain doesn't work. The blood has stopped. The organs are unfunctional. And then in the springtime, it just thaws and hops on its way. So we studied whether or not people could ever do that. You know, we see in science fiction movies, we see people put into a deep freeze and blasted into space. It turns out that the way the frog does it is with antifreeze chemicals in its blood. We, unfortunately, are largely water. And when we freeze, that water expands and explodes our cells and kills us, which is a bad side effect. So,
Yeah. So
no, we cannot freeze ourselves. But there are these medical visionaries who realize that if you cool us down, you can do some amazing things. For example, the simple act of putting an ice vest on you after you've had a heart attack can halve the percentage of times that these heart attack victims have brain damage as a result, cut in half. And yet, only 40% of American hospitals own the cooling vests. So it's a very simple technique. And then we visited another scientist who thinks he's hit upon the solution to the problem of organ banks. Right now, you can only keep a heart alive for 4 hours after somebody dies before you can transplant it into another person, and other organs are just a couple hours more than that. You cannot freeze an organ and store it unless you can somehow replace all the water in it with some kind of antifreeze, some kind of chemical that will not freeze. And after 15 years of trying, this guy has finally got an antifreeze that can keep organs alive and whole even when frozen. And while we were there, we saw him operate on a rabbit, remove the kidney, flush out the water in it, replace it with his chemical, and then freeze it solid, and then thaw it out and reimplant it in the rabbit. And the rabbit was fine. So
Wow. We
may one day see organ banks the same way we have blood banks today.
That sounds like that technology is not widely in use yet. It's still pretty cutting edge.
This is very cutting edge. He, as far as I know, he's the only one doing it, and he's just got rabbit kidneys going at this point. So he's never tried it on a person, and it probably will be a number of years before he does. But the proof of concept has been demonstrated.
Well, and finally, you've got making stuff safer. What's going on in the world of automotives?
Yeah, we spent an amazing day at a racetrack in California where Stanford University was testing out their self-driving racing car. So Google, of course, has been experimenting with self-driving cars for everyday commuter traffic, but this thing goes 120 miles an hour. Now, this is not remote control. It's not on a track. It is literally using enhanced GPS to know where it is on the road to within 1 centimeter. And I actually rode in this thing in the passenger seat as it drove itself through this two-and-a-half-mile racetrack. It was extremely terrifying, let's just say that. But the idea is to study how professional race car drivers handle friction, spin-outs, bumps in the road. They've been monitoring racing car drivers' brains as they drive and turning what they learn there into software for this car so that someday we could have this kind of smarts in all of our cars. So we could have our car do much safer driving for us.
Now, all of these four series episodes that we're talking about in the series, it's all mind-blowing science. It's kind of the point. But when you look back on it, what is the one thing that you look back and you could just go, oh, my gosh, wow, that's amazing, even for you, a science writer?
Yeah, I think, I could point to any number of the individual stories. I love a story from Safer about a new technology that scans incoming shipping containers, you know, all those 60 million containers a year that get shipped to the United States from China carrying all the stuff that we buy. Right now, they're basically not scanned for nukes and dirty bombs and uranium. They're basically an open door for terrorists. 1% of these containers are scanned with an X-ray, which is very easy to fool. You just put a piece of lead in your container. But these guys in California have worked out a way to scan every incoming container with muons. These are atomic particles from space that are bombarding us, 5,000 of them going through your body every minute, and they go at the speed of light through anything, lead, steel, cement. And so simply by putting a muon detector above and below the truck that's carrying the container, they can get a three-dimensional picture of everything inside, and they can see right away if there is uranium or a nuke or anything like that. And they've already got this up and running at Freeport in the Bahamas, and it works flawlessly, and I think it's going to keep us all a lot safer.
Fascinating stuff. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
David Pogue is a technology columnist for the New York Times and host of PBS's Nova Science Now, as well as the four-part series Making More Stuff.
If you missed the debut, Wisconsin Public Television will rebroadcast the episode Tuesday the 22nd, 8 p.m. on the Wisconsin Channel, 10 p.m. on Wisconsin Public Television.
Coming up, we'll talk to a guest who says Governor Walker should reject a proposal for a new casino. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Jean Purcell. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Listeners like you are such an important source of Wisconsin Public Radio's income. Your gift only takes a few minutes of your time, and it keeps this program and lots more going strong. So invest in your future listening by donating now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's really pretty simple when you think about it. Help pay for the programs you depend on. We're looking for 38 more players in just about the next 25 minutes or so make your donation now. Help us make that goal. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Central Time, you always get the news of the day, but you also get other stuff like science and psychology. We're talking about the psychology of war later on, a look at the history of the revolution in Iran. We give you the full scope here on Central Time. We're your go-to place for informative and interesting afternoons.
And we're doing our best to make that go-to place happen for you. And it's your financial support that's a big part of what makes these hours and everything you hear here possible. Listener support is the single largest piece of funding here at WPR. So make a contribution and do it right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we want to give a big thank you to our sustaining members. With ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card, you really have a big effect on WPR's funding, making it more stable.
And as a bonus to you, you'll probably find out that the automatic monthly payments are easy to fit within your budget, and they're easy because you really don't have to think about it. It renews automatically. In fact, now is a great time to increase that gift if you haven't done that for a while by a few dollars a month. Just give us a call at 888-202-2552, and we'll make that happen.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. Well, it's true that we get funding from the federal government and from the state, but here's the kicker. Listener contributions make up the single largest source of Wisconsin Public Radio's income.
And that's a fact. Your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. So now that you know just how important listener support is to Wisconsin Public Radio, make a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Giving back to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes, and in return, you'll get so much. Consider a donation of $100 a month if that fits your budget.
If it does fit your budget, that comes down to less than $4 a day, and it makes the talk, the news, the music, and all of the entertainment that you count on from WPR possible. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and remember, your donation of any amount is very much appreciated.
I'm Alec Baldwin. I'm here to remind you to think for a moment about how much you get from public radio. The events of the day discussed and analyzed by the most knowledgeable people. And compelling stories like the ones you hear on This American Life. You depend on programs like these, which is why...
Radio Éxitos.
You really ought to pick up the phone and contribute now.
Tenemos aquí todos los éxitos.
Because until you do, we've reassigned Ira Glass to a Spanish pop station.
Todo el día.
You do like hearing This American Life, don't you?
Sígalo.
Well, then you need to ask yourself, what will it take to make your pledge? What do we have to do? How far do we have to go? Here's how you can end the shenanigans now.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during the fall membership drive. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Jean Purcell. We're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we want to thank you in advance for your gift of $10, $15 a month, maybe whatever amount is the one that feels right to you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, I've been working in public broadcasting for a long time, so I know that there are many ways to say, make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. So, for example, we could say, stand up and be counted. Make your voice heard. Support what you love. You do all of these things, and you really do make a difference when you give, when you make a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And here is where we stand for this hour. We are looking for 38 more pledges in about the next 20 minutes. You fund the programs you rely on. That's actually how it works. And you do it when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make the call, you can get our new travel mug when you give $15 a month or more. Among other things, it says listener-powered on it. And that is absolutely true here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We are listener-powered, and it's because of people like you. That mug, by the way, available at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We really appreciate our sustaining members. These are members who give WPR such reliable monthly support. I've been talking to some people who have tried this, and people seem to really love it. They say, it's so easy. I don't really have to think about it anymore. It's one less thing that I have on my plate. Plus, it supports Wisconsin Public Radio every month. It's an easy way to go. If you're someone who's got a lot on your plate, consider becoming a sustainer. Make today the day that you increase your support of Wisconsin Public Radio by $5 a month, or whatever amount you choose. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yep, it's easy to do, and it takes just a few minutes to do it. In fact, we heard earlier today from Rebecca in Davenport, Iowa, and she tells us that I started listening a couple weeks ago, and I just fell in love with Wisconsin Public Radio. The programs are great, and it's been keeping me informed. Well, Rebecca, thanks so much for that. And there you heard from somebody who's only been listening for a couple of weeks. Well, what if you've been listening for a year or two or three, and you've never made a call and made a pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio? Now is the time to do it. Make your pledge online at WPR.org. Follow Rebecca's example at 888-202-2552.
And remember, listener support, it really is. It's the single largest piece of the budget here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So every pledge matters. When we say that, we mean it literally. And we're so grateful to you for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, for making that pledge right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.
And thank you so much for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later in the program, we'll be talking about the history of modern Iran and what revolution is meant there.
But first, we heard yesterday from James Causey about why he supports a proposed new casino in Kenosha.
Today, we'll talk to a guest who takes the opposite side and says Governor Walker should reject the proposal.
Joining us now is Mike Nichols. He's president of the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. We've got a link to his piece, Walker Shouldn't Roll the Dice on Kenosha Casino, on the Central Time Facebook page. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you say Governor Walker should say no to this casino on the deadline next week. Why?
Because I think it's not a good thing for the state as a whole. I think there are better uses for the property in Kenosha.
So the argument, one of the big arguments is in favor of it is not a lot of jobs in Kenosha. They need jobs, and this will provide, supporters are saying, a few thousand decent-paying jobs to the area.
Right, and that's that's true. You know, at least it's true in the short term, and I heard you know, James make that argument yesterday, but you know, the reality is this is, you know, kind of, it's kind of ironic that people are talking about there not being jobs in Kenosha at this point in time. You know, there's been a lot of publicity about a couple things in Kenosha regarding properties very close to where Dairyland is right now. Dairyland is, you know, obviously the area where the Menominee now want to build the new casino, but you know, there's a business park that's just east of that site, and you know, you might recall that in the last month alone, there's a new company, a lighting company, that has announced it wants to come up from Illinois, Kennel Manufacturing. They're going to bring up to 400 high-paying, good jobs. I mean, just, you know, within a stone's throw, really, of where Dairyland is and where the Menominee want, you know, to build the new casino. That Amazon facility that everybody's talking about, if you know Kenosha, kind of the Dairyland property where the Kenosha would where the casino would be is just south of the Kenosha airport there. That Amazon property is just north of it. I mean, it again is just very close. That Amazon facility, I mean, they're talking about 1,000 jobs there. There could be another Amazon facility beyond that. You know, they're talking about not just local tax revenue once the tax incremental financing has been paid off, but $30 million a year in sales taxes just from that Amazon facility. So, I mean, to say that there aren't other opportunities for jobs and revenue at this point in time, you know, finally, as we you know, really do kind of come out of this long, what they say, you know, call a great recession, I think that's just misguided. There are other opportunities, and ones that I think are probably you know, much more sustainable long term than a casino, than another casino.
And that's one of your main arguments when you say another casino, that maybe the area, maybe Wisconsin already has enough casinos.
Yeah, so we had a study that was done about a year ago by Dan Allish. He's a professor emeritus, actually is his title, up at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And, you know, he did an analysis of existing casinos and demand in the state and, you know, came to the conclusion that it really appears that the casino, the market is saturated, or at least close to being saturated. And, you know, part of that might have to do with the recession. I mean, since 2007, you know, gambling money spent on gaming in the Indian casinos has gone down a little bit. Might be partly to do with the recession, but it also appears that it is a saturated market. We have, you know, we have a couple dozen casinos already in this state. We have proposals not just in Kenosha, but, you know, Sheboygan, Beloit, Schulzburg. I mean, certainly there are going to be other casinos. If this one is approved, there'll be other proposals. We have casinos in surrounding states, you know, pretty close to our borders. You know, we're trying to pull people from other states. They're trying to pull people from us. You've got, you know, internet. Online gambling is starting to become legal in a variety of states, and you know, there's going to be competition there as well. So, you know, I don't doubt there's a positive benefit for Kenosha, but you know, I'm not sure that's a benefit that's going to last forever.
One argument I've heard, and I think James Causey made it yesterday, is if not in Kenosha, maybe somebody in Illinois parks one just across that border, and they get the jobs, they get the benefits over there.
Sure. I mean, there's already gambling in, I mean, I used to live in Elgin. There's already gambling in Illinois. There's already a lot of gambling along our borders and UP, Minnesota, Iowa, you know. I mean, sure, they, you know, there'll probably be competition down there anyway, regardless. I mean, people are going to probably make, you know, try to make a buck where they can. But, you know, but again, the question isn't just, you know, what happens in Kenosha. The question is statewide. And you know, a couple of the other tribes, at least the Potawatomi and the Ho-Chunk, they actually have provisions in their gaming compacts with the state that if they suffer a loss in revenue as a result of a new casino, such as the one that would go in down in Kenosha, the state actually has to make them whole for that loss. And so, I mean, what would actually happen with the Potawatomi is they would no longer have to pay as much in revenue to the state of Wisconsin. The Ho-Chunk say that the state could actually end up having to pay them instead of them having to pay the state in the future if they lose enough revenue as a result of competition. So I just think, you know, I think there are other opportunities in Kenosha, and I just think statewide that we have to look at it as a policy issue for everybody in Wisconsin, and I just think there are better ways to go. This is not, you know, casinos are not really part of a true free market. You know, why not let the market work? Why don't we bring in Amazon? Let Kennel Manufacturing come in from Illinois. You know, see if there are better uses for that property, and it appears that there would be.
Well, why not have a new casino and let the market work there, and let, if you'll pardon, the chips fall where they may?
I mean, because it's not a free market with gambling in this state. So do we let anybody gamble anywhere? I mean, I guess if that's what you're arguing, you know, we could, you know, people make that argument. You know, it's just like, hey, why are we gonna let McDonald's go in but not let Burger King go in? Well, that's a free market. No, we shouldn't regulate that. But I mean, you know, casinos and gambling, it's already heavily regulated. It's really not a reflection of the free market.
So the governor has said one of his conditions for saying yes to this casino would be that the other tribes in the state would have to agree to the proposal. You've mentioned a couple tribes with casinos that have not shown a likelihood to say yes to it. So is this a moot point? Is the answer already no, do you think?
I don't know, but it would appear to be. I mean, I certainly have no you know, inside information or anything like that. I've never talked to the governor about the issue, but yeah, it certainly appears that he's going to say no.
If after the show the governor gave you a call and gave you his ear for a few minutes, what would you say to him?
I'd say just what I wrote. I'd say that you have to look at this from a statewide policy perspective. You have to rely on the free market. The best thing is to say no.
You've mentioned that the Amazon plant there, the lighting manufacturing, What do you think that, say, Kenosha or the region or the state as a whole could do to promote more things like that, maybe on that old dog track site that we're talking about for the casino, to try to get more similar types of manufacturing plants instead of a casino?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general we have to make the state as conducive as possible for new business. And, you know, part of that's the tax structure of the state. There are, you know, not real big on a lot of incentives. I think mostly the free market drives that. And I think, you know, I just think that is, if you drive down there and all you have to do is drive along 94 and you see, you know, what's going in there and, you know, how close that is to Chicago, between, you know, Milwaukee and Chicago, I think just naturally there's going to be business growth there.
We've heard, you know, some bad thing. You pointed out some bright spots in the economy there, but in southeastern Wisconsin, a lot of unemployment in certain communities. Are you, casino or no, are you optimistic about the jobs future in that part of our state?
Am I optimistic about it? You know what? We've had slow job growth in Wisconsin. It's been slower than some of the surrounding states, and I certainly hope that's turning around, but. I don't think that the best way to turn that around right now is to have another casino there. I just think there are better options on that land in particular.
All right. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it as well.
That's Mike Nichols, president of the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute.
There's more Central Time coming up. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.
This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret. At Wisconsin Public Radio, listener contributions are the single largest source of our funding. Your gift keeps the programs that you value, including this one, on the air. So make your contribution now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
We had a great hour last hour. We want to keep that momentum going. Make your pledge right now to keep this program going strong at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying lots of different topics with different guests today. We've been hearing about chocolate and toffee and caramel and what goes into making them. We heard about the proposed casino in Kenosha and why Mike Nichols thinks it's a bad idea. We have also heard about the science behind making things faster and colder with David Pogue from Nova. Well, it's just a sampling of the things you hear every day on Central Time and on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving to WPR is easy. It just takes a few minutes of your time, a gift of any amount, like maybe $10 a month.
The donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and please give as generously as you can.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Block with NPR News. We've thought long and hard about how to support the work we do here in public radio, and it's really quite a challenge. Our stations need support, our network needs support, but we really don't like to interrupt our programs to ask you. We like to keep the flow of information coming. Well, recently, we've come up with a new way to pay for public radio, and our solution is found in two words: the sustainer. The sustainer is a person who pays for public radio automatically each month. And as more people become sustainers, the need for on-air fundraising days like this goes down. More programming, less fundraising. It's a win-win proposition. So I ask you, please become a sustainer today. And thanks.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret, and we're here to ask for your support, your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall membership drive. Whether you decide what fits your budget is maybe $5 a month, or maybe you can afford $100 a month and you listen a lot, anything above that, below, in between, we appreciate it. Every single gift, every amount. We count on that gift. You can make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, already during Central Time today, we've heard from 25 people who have made their first ever pledge. That is awesome. How about 10 more by the time we're done talking, by the end of this news break? 10 people making your first ever pledge. Are we talking about you? Have you been listening for weeks, months, years, and you haven't pledged yet? It's okay. No guilt. But this is a great time to get on board as a member at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio listeners turn into Wisconsin Public Radio contributors for lots of reasons, but one of the main reasons is that they want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference and to help your local community.
Your pledge today not only pays for the programs you listen to, it also gives others the chance to discover WPR. Make that difference, a real difference, with maybe $5 a month or whatever amount is comfortable for you. And you do it at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
If you've got little ones around the house who are learning about the world and how to think about it and how to tackle and think about some complex issues and questions, Wisconsin Public Radio is a great resource for family discussion, and it gets everyone talking and thinking. That's what's important. If you've got a family that you're kind of teaching how to think and how to interact with the world, consider a pledge for them, for that generation, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's a thought. Pledge $180. That's $15 a month. And you can ask for the brand new Wisconsin Public Radio travel mug from Clean Canteen. Metal mug. You can hear it there. Hot beverages, cold beverages, you name it. And it's got our brand spanking new logo on it. Yours for a pledge of $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A gift to Wisconsin Public Radio is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio station, and so do lots of other people.
And so make your pledge now for yourself and for your community at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's see, we're hoping for, 10 more new listeners by the time this break is done. So help us get there. If you're someone who's been listening a while, take the plunge. Become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and support the station that, you know, you're already listening to. Make your pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Hey, Todd and Heidi from Madison made their first pledge. They say, we listen to public radio nearly every day and thought, hey, we pay for TV. Maybe we should be paying for radio. You know, it's voluntary. You don't have to pay anything. But I love that Todd and Heidi thought about it that way. Thank you so much for your pledge. How about you? Make a pledge right now. Contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, if you're not already a sustaining member, become one right now. Set up ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's incredibly convenient for you. One less thing to take care of every month, and it provides reliable funding for Wisconsin Public Radio.
Become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. All right, we've already had one brand new member of Wisconsin Public Radio in just a couple minutes since I invited 10. I bet there are more on the line. Make your first ever pledge now or up your current pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll feel great every time you listen knowing you contributed. WPR.org, and thank you.